You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 92nd percentile of Hezzy pull-ups, but in the 98th percentile of Jimbo's. That's almost tops in the league. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Michael Parmesan Cheesley, and this is episode 218. On today's show, we're going to break down the Knicks' loss to the Magic. We're also going to have a mailbag where we answer your questions, including, I like this one, who my five favorite scrub Knicks are of all time. Also, I'll close out by sharing my thoughts on the injuries to Tim Hardaway Jr. and Chris Stapps Porzingis. First, just one quick update. I was traveling over the weekend. I did my podcast while I was traveling for you guys, and somehow in transit on the way back, I lost one piece of my setup. I believe it's technically called a dongle. I will not be able to replace this dongle until tomorrow, so in the meantime, I'm recording just using my computer's microphone. I apologize in advance for the sound quality. It's going to be really dark if it sounds better than usual, but yeah, that's what's going on. So if you notice any difference in the audio, my apologies. We'll have that fixed for you tomorrow. All right, let's start the show.
Yes!
The Knicks lost to the Magic on Sunday, 105-100. The loss came, of course, without KP and Timmy. So it would be ridiculous to say that this was a worrying loss. You're missing 43 points from the lineup. And ultimately, it is the offense that did them in here. I know the Magic are complete garbage. So you're like, what the hell is going on? But without those two guys, what do you expect? And I think it was the offense. Let's talk about it. On defense, they gave up 108.2 points per 100 possessions, which is almost exactly their season average. You could argue that they should be able to play better defense against such a scrub team, but minus their two best guys, Kristaps in particular has a huge impact on the Knicks' defense. They held the fort all right. Orlando shot 48.8% effective field goal percentage. Again, that includes the fact that three-point shots are worth 50% more than two-point shots. And that's actually a 32nd percentile for all games played offensively for Orlando. So not a good mark from Orlando. The Knicks did okay at limiting the efficiency of their shot attempts. The one thing on defense that I saw, the Knicks did foul more often. The Magic had a great free throw rate in this one. They had 30 made free throw shots for every 100 shot attempts, and that rate is 90th percentile for all games played this season. Part of that is Fournier got 10 foul shots. You know, we could have seen some Hardaway against him, but perhaps he fouls a little bit less. Dotson got some time there. He had 3 fouls. Vucevic also got 7 foul shots. He could have seen some time against Kristaps. Michael Beasley, Kristaps' replacement, had 4 fouls. But in general, the whole team was just scrambling, gambling. There were 24 personal fouls on defense. So that was the one negative that was a little bit out of whack for them. But overall, as far as efficiency goes, the Knicks did an okay job against the Magic, against what they've been doing this season. But let's talk about the offense, which is where I think they really suffered without these two guys. No shock there, right? The Knicks scored 103.1 points per 100 possessions. That's 30th percentile in the league. Very low. And the Knicks, these stats are coming from cleaning the glass, by the way. So minus garbage time, minus end of quarter heaves. You know, and the Knicks on the season are at about, as of a couple days ago where I did my quarter season profile of them, they're at 108.8 points per 100 possessions. So they're playing 5 points off that pace. That's a huge deal. Part of this was their shooting. Of course, it suffers without Kristaps especially. 49.5% effective field goal percentage. That's 36th percentile for all games played. Very low. They didn't get to the line at all. They shot 10 free throws to Orlando's 29. First of all, no respect at the Garden. What the hell, referees? But also, you know, that's without Kristaps and that's without Hardaway. Kristaps is doing a great job of getting to the line this season. He's averaging 7 free throw attempts per game. And Hardaway's doing okay. He's got 3.6 free throw attempts per game. So you're missing just about 10 free throw attempts per game right there. The Knicks, interestingly enough, on offense, I harp on this a lot, were actually okay at turning the ball over in this one, at least versus their regular season, full season numbers. They had 14 turnovers on the game, and they average around 16 per game on the season. So a little bit better than average there at holding on to the ball. One of their big problems was they didn't shoot any threes, shot selection. They only shot 15 on the game, which is 0th percentile for all games played. You may argue that the Knicks shouldn't, you know, be at the top in this stat, but they should certainly aren't doing themselves any favors by shooting the least number of free throws that any team has shot, you know, this season. They shot poorly at the rim. 57.6%, which you may think is okay because that's more than half, but that's only 28th percentile for shots at the rim for all games played this season. You know, 40% of their shots came to the rim, which is good. That's something like 75th percentile. They just couldn't convert those as often as they really needed to. Like we've seen all season, 47% of their shots came in mid-range. That's a very high percentage. That's 91st percentile for all games played. And that's not a good look with Kristaps out. With Kristaps, you can survive with that because he's so efficient from there. These other guys, especially Beasley, are not. One of their big problems in this game was they didn't get out in transition at all. 7.2% of their plays were transition plays, which is 3rd percentile for all games played. Hardaway and Kristaps being out are huge here. Huge here. Talking about on-off numbers, when Hardaway is on the court, 14.7% of the Knicks' plays end in transition. That's not great relative to the league. That's 43rd percentile in the league. But that's 4.5 percentage points higher than when he's off the court. And that difference, those 4.5 percentage points, is 96th percentile for wings. That's a position, the wing position, that typically makes a huge difference in getting out into transition. You really rely heavily on those guys to get out, to run. So the fact that he's 96th percentile in the league on-off with frequency of transition plays for the Knicks, that's big, and they were missing that. Kristaps, same deal. He's huge in this regard. 15% of Knicks' offensive plays are in transition when he's on the court, which makes sense because he's an incredibly mobile big. He can really fly relative to a 7'3 guy and other bigs in the league. So having him out there, having your big quote-unquote slow guy be as fast as Kristaps is, as mobile as Kristaps is, as, you know, graceful as Kristaps is in transition, that's a big deal, and they missed that. That's that 15% of Knicks' plays that are in transition when he's on the court, that's 4 percentage points higher than when he's off, which is 94th percentile. That difference, that 4 percentage point difference, is 94th percentile for bigs. Both these guys are huge in getting out in transition. The Knicks really suffered for not having it there. Let's put this another way. Without these guys, someone's got to take minutes. Someone's got to use up possessions. Michael Beasley and Lance Thomas had the highest usage rates on the team in the loss to the Magic. 32.1% and 30.2%. Ooh, dad joke of the week, respectively. So Michael Beasley used up 32% of possessions. Lance Thomas used up 30% of possessions when he was on the court. Those guys, that was the highest on the team. 28 minutes for Beasley and 21 for Lance. And that's just, you're not going to be, that's not a winning formula. Beasley's points per shot attempt, of those attempts that he were using, were okay-ish. He scored 1.1 points per shot attempt. But Lance's were really bad, his points per shot attempt, 0.84. Those guys were your two highest usage rate guys on the team. Spells trouble. One question that I've gotten online a little bit about this game was, why did Ramon Sessions play in the fourth quarter? And a lot of people thought that this was the difference in the game, Ramon Sessions playing in the fourth quarter when the Knicks were, you know, trying to mount a comeback. It was certainly odd, I'll give you this, that he played 4 minutes in the fourth instead of Jack or Frank. but it was only 4 minutes. In those 4 minutes, he didn't play well. I'll give you that. He was -5 with literally no other stats. He was just like zeros across the box score, except for shot attempts. He was 0 for 2 from the field, including 0 for 1 from 3. I did think it was a little strange that he was in there, but if you're talking about why the Knicks lost, lots of other stuff happened in that quarter alone, if you just look at that quarter. Beasley had 2 turnovers. You know, that's huge for a quarter. If you look at the Magic, Vucevic had 12 points. Simmons had 8 points. The point guards, you know, presumably who Sessions would be guarding, Augustin and Elfrid Payton had 0 points between them in the fourth quarter. I know guards breaking down the defense can cause these other guys to succeed, like Vooch and Simmons, but they're not going to cause all of it. His Sessions' bad defense in 4 minutes isn't going to lead to those 20 points that were given up between those two guys. That didn't all happen because of him. Going back to Knicks, Lance Thomas went 1 for 4 in the quarter. Beasley went 1 for 3, so very low efficiency there. It was a curious decision, but I just don't think that Sessions was the difference necessarily in the game. Maybe from a momentum standpoint, you can argue it. When you look at just like overall, I mean, you can extend this reasoning to the whole game. I'm a big believer in this. A game is not won or lost in the fourth quarter. I think fourth quarter moments get magnified, and yes, some coaching decisions that are made in the fourth quarter can be the difference, but the game is played over 4 quarters, and the whole thing matters. The Knicks lost the fourth quarter by 3 points, but they lost the first quarter by 10, and that's a big deal. It's a big hole to dig out of. Sessions didn't play at all when that happened, when they went down by 10. So, curious decision. I didn't love it. I'd like to hear more about why Hornacek did it, but I don't think that was the difference in the game. You guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The New York Giants just fired Jerry Reese, their GM, and McAdoo. More like McAdoat, am I right? More like McAdoat, am I right? If you want to hear more about that, head on over to Locked On Giants, also part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's mailbag time. Time to answer questions from you, the listeners. First two questions come from Johnny Caps via Gmail. You can send us emails at lockedonknicks@gmail.com. Here's his first question. Who are your top 5 all-time favorite garbage time Knicks? Fan or personal favorites who only played in garbage time? So in order for me to kind of quantify this, I extended it to like not just garbage time, but like scrubs who don't play that much. It's not every season that you have guys who average like 4 minutes a game. So I tried to stick to no more than 15 minutes per game to like say that these are garbage time players. Now, I started watching the Knicks in the late 80s, early 90s, when there were only 12 active roster spots on your team. So especially back then, guys got more minutes in general. You know, you wanted to get the most out of every player. So hopefully you're not carrying someone who's only playing 3 minutes a game. You know what I mean? That being said, I went through all the rosters from the late 80s, early 90s, up until the present day to give my memory a little jump start, and here's what I've come up with. I present to you ranked in order of importance to my development as a Knick fan, but also as a human being, the top 5 garbage time Knicks. You know what? I'll go in reverse order. I don't want to blow it, right? Number 5, I'm going with Jerome Williams, the Junkyard Dog. He played his final season with the New York Knicks, averaging just about 15 minutes per game. I loved his nickname, Junkyard Dog. I loved his face. Just had this insanely goofy face with a real room-brightening, crazy huge smile with jangled teeth. He was all over the place. He's one of these like hustle guys who gives up his body, you know, plays with reckless abandon. You gotta love those guys when it comes to garbage time Knicks. Number 4. On my top 5 all-time favorite garbage time Knicks, I'm going with Malik Rose. He played 23 minutes in his first year when he came over for a trade, but then he got less and less every season, so I'm counting him. His first full season with the Knicks, he averaged 15 minutes, then 12, then 10, and then 8.9 minutes before he was traded again. I love Malik Rose because he was supposed to lend his championship pedigree coming over from the Spurs to the 2004-2009 Knicks, which, if you remember your Knicks history, that's an official hashtag laughing my ass off. They needed, like, not doormat pedigree, not championship pedigree. But anyway, like, the one thing that people always harped on about, like, his veteran savvy was his pull-the-chair maneuver. Announcers love talking about Malik Rose's pull-the-chair maneuver, where someone's backing him down on the post and he kind of, like, moves away quickly. So the guy he's guarding will kind of, like, throw himself into air and fall over. And he did do it quite a bit. But, like, he was basically brought in to teach the Knicks the pull-the-chair maneuver. I'll love him forever. Malik Rose. Cool name, too. Number three. Top five all-time garbage time Knicks. I almost went with Michael Doliak here. I almost went with him. But then I realized he was just an earlier, kind of inferior prototype to the man, the myth, the legend himself, Josh Harrelson. That's right, Jorts. George was just like this big donkey, this big smelly ox out there. I feel like he was supposed, like, wasn't that a thing that he smelled really bad? He had like the nastiest farts on the team. He definitely looked like he did, even if he didn't. He played 15 minutes per game in his one and only year with the Knicks. It was one of his three seasons in the NBA total. Jorts is my number three all-time scrub Knick. Number two would be Rick Brunson, who played from 98 to 99. He played, from the 98-99 season to 2000-2001. He was the first scrub. No, that's not true. We'll get to him in a minute. But basically, me and my younger brother Joe, shouts to Joe, just love to say Rick Brunson's name in like a funny, you can tell me if you think it's funny, a silly way. We used to go, Brunson! And sometimes that's all you need to love a scrub. That's why I wanted to put him up. When you're talking about these guys, it can just be one thing that you love, one silly thing, and you'll remember them forever. Me and Joe will always remember going, Rick Brunson, his scrub bona fides. Like I said, he played three seasons in New York, never averaging more than 7.8 minutes per game. Here we go, drum roll please. You guys do it, not me. I'll wait a couple seconds. Okay. Number one, all-time favorite garbage time Nick is Herb Mother Effin' Williams, the king of the Knicks scrubs. I mean, where do you start with this guy? What there was to love about him. First of all, he seemed like he was 500 years old the day he was born. Right? Like a little, kind of like a Benjamin Button action. Someone should check in on him, see if he's gotten younger over the past couple years. Part of that might have been because the Knicks got him in his age 34 season. And yet, he played seven seasons with the Knicks, retiring when he was 40 years old. And he just had, like, he looked like a tree. Like, he looked like Groot out there running around. He had, like, this old man face. His first name was Herb, which I know that we have an international listenership. Where I come from, in New Jersey, in the U.S. of A. Herb is a word for dork, a very popular word for dork. A nerd, someone who is not cool. Could you imagine whatever language is your first language? Like, take some time right now to think about that. Or wherever region you're from in the U.S. There's this 900-year-old tree man who comes in during garbage time, and his name is Dork Williams? Nerd Williams? Take a common last name from your language, and it'll make it even better, because Williams is, like, so generic in the U.S. Like, here comes huge Dork Garcia, who looks like he's 400 years old, like he's a walking tree from the Lord of the Rings, but, like, a kindly tree. He had the face of, like, a kindergarten teacher, like a kindly grandfather, right? Not like a fierce competitor, which has only made it more hilarious that he stuck around as a Knicks assistant coach through 700 regime changes. His scrub bona fides, he never averaged more than 13.3 minutes per game for the Knicks and averaged no more than 8.8 minutes per game in his final 3 years. Just to run that down real quick one more time. Number five, Jerome Williams, the Junkyard Dog. Number four, Malik Rose. Number three, almost went with Michael Doliak, but went with Josh Harrelson, the superior vintage. Number two, Rick Brunson. And number one, king of the scrubs, Herb Williams. Second question comes from Johnny Caps, also via Gmail. Why aren't the Doors cool? I totally disagree. That's what he said. I said this the other day, the Doors aren't cool, in reference to Kristaps Porzingis calling himself the Lizard. Jim Morrison's the Lizard King, to catch you up if you didn't hear that one. I'll tell you why, as quickly as I can. Jim Morrison has this reputation of being a poet, of being like a beautiful poet. The people who think this, first of all, are insufferable. Here's what someone wrote online about his poetry. This poet, prophet, rock idol flung the doors of perception wide open, and as we read his poetry, for an instant, we become infinite. And you may say, like, who is this guy, like, that I'm quoting? Why does he get to represent all Jim Morrison fans? I don't know who he is, but everyone who reveres Jim Morrison as, like, a superior poet sounds just like this guy. Now let's read two of Jim Morrison's poems. They're very short, so you know what I'm talking about. This first poem is called Power, okay? I can make the earth stop in its tracks. I made the blue cars go away. I can make myself invisible or small. I can become gigantic and reach the farthest things. He sounds like a three-year-old playing. If I cover my eyes, I disappear. All right, I'll continue. I can change the course of nature. I can place myself anywhere in space or time. I can summon the dead. I can perceive events on other worlds, in my deepest inner mind, and in the minds of others. I can, I am. Come on, one more poem. This one's called The World on Fire. The World on Fire. Taxi from Africa. The Grand Hotel. He was drunk, a big party last night. Back going back in all directions, sleeping these insane hours. He's just writing about like life on the road. Anyway, I'll never wake up in a good mood again. I'm sick of these stinky boots. Just give him a golf clap for this one. In the interest of time, here's how I'd sum up my feelings on the Doors. I admit that they have some fun songs, but their entire aesthetic is informed by a man who thinks the work that I just read to you constitutes good poetry and good art. The rest of their aesthetic is informed by this guy who made those terrible choices. I mean, the guy's got a hell of a voice, but the Doors, I don't know, they're not cool. This next question comes from Tyrone Morris, also via Gmail. He asks, are you in favor of drafting for need or best player available, and which player is your ideal 2018 draft choice and why? In general, there's so much context in everyone's situations. You know, there's like a million different things to factor in, but in general, I'm saying best player available, and I'll tell you why. Let's say you draft someone at a position you already have. If they turn out amazing, right, the worst case scenario is your team is a little clunky, and if you have to, you can trade one of your excellent players who both play the same position. Although in today's NBA, in today's positionless NBA, I think a good coach can find a way for two great players to meld in almost every situation. Best case scenario, if you draft someone who plays basically the same position as another great player of yours, you've added an awesome player to your squad who makes the team even better. Now, you could draft someone who plays the same position as like your best player, for instance, and then they might stink, right? But anyone could stink. And at that point, it's a lost player no matter what. If you drafted best available, or if you drafted a guy who you thought fit a need, that guy could stink too, and then you've lost. You thought this guy, by your draft evaluation process, would be better than the other guy. And so if he stinks, it's not because you had the wrong strategy going in terms of like best player available versus fit. It's because you didn't evaluate talent correctly. I think drafting for need can also compound mistakes that you've made in the past. For instance, imagine if the Sixers had not taken Embiid because they already had Nerlens Noel. That would have been a huge mistake. I think drafting for need can lead to you missing out on era-defining players. A year after drafting Clyde Drexler, for instance, the Trail Blazers drafted Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. You may have heard of him, in part because Michael Jordan played the same position as Clyde Drexler. Friend of the show, Matt Miranda, actually has a great take on this very question, on the best player available question, on a mailbag that he wrote for Posting and Toasting a few weeks back. And he fleshes out a couple of these arguments more deeply along these lines. I'm going to move on in the interest of time for this episode, but I suggest you check out what Matt Miranda wrote on Posting and Toasting. In answer to the part B of Tyrone's question, who do I want? you know, who's my ideal draft choice? Which player would that be? Honestly, I haven't had any time to watch college basketball yet or research these guys. But as we get into the off season, towards, you know, the end of this season, there will be extensive coverage on Locked On Knicks of draft picks. I'll give you guys my takes as I research these guys more. I'll bring in experts to add to whatever opinions I form on the matter. But as of right now, in the early going, I don't have one of these guys earmarked just yet. Ricardo Albuquerque, this is the final mailbag question. Via Twitter, he says, I was trying to make an actual question out of this. Technically, it's a question, but it's actually just a petty, passive-aggressive statement. Here it is. What if the Knicks outperform OKC this season? In parentheses, Galaxy brain. I got to be honest with you. I don't take pride in saying this, but I am taking great joy in Oklahoma City's struggles. You know, it is what it is. What can I say? Pettiness is fun. My pettiness is off the charts when it comes to OKC failing with Melo. I wish Melo nothing but the best on one level, but on another level, he annoyed the shit out of me for years. I wasn't happy when he forced his way onto the Knicks. I mostly like the guy as a human, but yeah, I'm loving it. Every time Oklahoma City struggles, I love it this season. You guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Every 5-star rating helps very much. Thank you very much. Locked On Knicks. Let's talk about the injuries to Kristaps Porzingis and Tim Hardaway Jr. They both missed Sunday's game against the Magic. Kristaps is missing Monday's game against the Pacers as he recuperates from his sprained ankle and some sort of illness. Timmy is also missing Monday's game against the Pacers. There was some useful reporting from Mark Berman on this. He talked to an orthopedist at Northwestern. I know you and I are both surprised there, but it's true. Berman helped out here. Here's what the orthopedist from Northwestern had to say about Timmy's injury. They've been calling it a stress injury. It's a little bit vague. If it's a stress fracture, aka a fracture so small that it takes an MRI or bone scan to find, that could be up to 2 months of time without Tim Hardaway Jr. You can run on that, but chances are you'll suffer a full fracture at some point and then you're done for the season, okay? If it's a stress reaction, which is swelling in the bone, that could be anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks for a small amount of swelling to 4 to 6 weeks for a large amount of swelling. So you're looking at anywhere from 1 week off to 2 months. The answer to both of these scenarios, in case you're wondering, is rest, not surgery. So it's not super serious, but it could be a lot of time missing for a Hardaway. What does this mean? Well, we'll get to see a lot more of Dotson. You know, they'll get to see more of the young guys in general. But they'll suffer in the short term, as we talked about when we talked about the Magic game. When you talk about the injury outlook in general, there's some people who say this is really bad for their playoff hopes. It's definitely not great. Some people are ecstatic that it means the Knicks will lose. I really do think at this point in the season, seeing what we've seen, the Knicks are as close to being in a no-lose situation and a win-win situation as you can be. I think the Knicks have really, you know, they've shown enough that when they're all healthy that if you're worried about Kristaps saying the Knicks suck, I want out of here, I think they've shown enough when healthy that Kristaps would understand that the team is heading in the right direction. You know, if they struggle due to injuries which do not threaten to be chronic injuries, that's almost in a way you can make an argument for. I'm not sure I believe this, but you can make an argument that struggling with non-chronic injuries could be the best case scenario for the future as far as establishing a solid foundation, both with the players you already have, but being able to add top-level talent in the draft. Think, you know, when David Robinson was injured and the Spurs were terrible. It wasn't a career-threatening injury. He came back strong the next season, and the Spurs drafted Tim Duncan. That's kind of what you're thinking of. It's that model there. The thing you really don't want, like the worst-case scenario for this season, is to have everyone healthy the entire season and the Knicks win 17 games. I think we've seen clearly that when they're all healthy, they're like a 500-ish team. So the tricky part is, who knows what injuries are going to be chronic? This is a thing that's very hard to predict. Timmy's bone injuries, you know, they're not awesome. I don't love them, but I think it's way too early to be panicked about his long-term health. I don't think there's any evidence here of him having particularly weak bones, for instance. Kristaps, he's got a rolled ankle, which, again, I'm never going to worry about too much. His back stuff that he suffered with in the past, although it's not what's going on here, that scares me a little bit, but ankle stuff just doesn't bother me. I don't know. It just doesn't bother me at all. All right, that's it for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. As always, thank you very much for listening. Do me a favor, rate us on iTunes if you get a minute. 5 stars only, please. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks. Be chill to each other and join us tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks, where we'll recap Monday night's game against... Who are they playing? I'm stalling. Because I'm momentarily forgetting. What is it? Knicks versus... Who are they playing? This is killing me. The Pacers, of course. You know what? Gotta leave the warts in sometimes. Let you guys know I'm human. Alright, that's it for me. Peace!